Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 329.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast.
Learn jazz piano without all the guesswork.
Now, your host, Brendan Lowe.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, where we have one mission, that is to help you achieve jazz piano freedom so that you can express your true inner soul and emotions instead of having to copy what others have shown you. Now, we do this by providing structured and organized jazz piano education on specific jazz piano tools that you can then take and use over any tune so that you have complete jazz piano freedom. Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 329. My name is Brendan Lowe, creator and founder of Jazz Piano School. Thank you so much for being here. I got an awesome episode for you on modern basics. And it's not just basics, but it's really helpful information and steps that can really start to transform the sound. Like if you've been deeply immersed in bebop or kind of an old school traditional sound, this podcast will really help you learn the true fundamentals, the 80-20. I love the 80-20. If you haven't heard my podcast before, if this is the first time you're listening, I really love getting down to the 20% of jazz education that really delivers 80% of what you're looking for, because I truly believe so much of a student's time is actually wasted studying and focusing the wrong material, even though that may be great material. Like, it could be the best material in the world. It could be super interesting, very fascinating, very engaging and inspirational. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to help you get 80% of the results that you're looking for, right? Have you ever thought about that before? And this is one of the reasons that students fail to make a lot of progress in a short amount of time and actually reach their goals, and then they end up getting frustrated, and it's like, well, why aren't I making progress? I'm doing all the studying and I'm working consistently. Well, a lot of times it's because the stuff that you're focusing on is like the 0.2% of information that is really not the meat and potatoes of what you need to learn. You're essentially starting with an empty cutting board, an empty bowl, and you're taking spices and spending so much time on the spices and like, oh, should I use this spice, this spice, this spice, putting them in the bowl, mixing them up. But then at the end of the day, you look at the bowl, you have just like a little, you know, a teaspoon of spices or a tablespoon of spices, and you're like, wait a second, this isn't really a meal. Right? There's no substance, there's no meat and potatoes. So this happens a lot in jazz. And again, to kind of sum up what I'm trying to say here, I always love trying to give everyone that listens to the podcast, my whole philosophy, and inside of Jazz Piano School, the membership, all the free content I produce, trying to give you guys the meat and potatoes, the 80-20, the 20% of jazz education that's going to get you 80% of the way. And especially throughout the last year, and I'm actually going to be revamping the inside of the Jazz Piano School membership to really hone in on this, because I've seen my students make tremendous amount of progress in my live accelerator program and my mastermind program. And I really want to start to focus on this particular philosophy that I've kind of honed in over the past year and a half, which has really led to exponential growth in my students' progress. In an amazing way, right? And it's nothing like you've probably ever seen before or done, I promise you. It's very different from traditional websites out there, jazz piano educational websites, education that you've studied, private lessons, things like that. It's really a new way of learning jazz that I've crafted over the years. Anyway, this particular podcast is doing just that on the modern basics. When you implement these steps, this is the 20% that will give you the 80%, right? Now, these steps are simple, but mighty. You do need to practice them a lot. You need to work on them and learn them so that they're fluid and smooth and they become integrated into your playing. Now, the way that you do that is by, unfortunately, you know, tedious, slow practice of these elements, right? I'm able to implement them fast and I demonstrate them fast for you, okay? But the way that you want to really go about doing this is take one at a time and really spend time with that one. If you're just working on step two that I give you or element four, just work on element four. Try not to work on all of them. Really spend time with element four, because each one of these tools is extremely powerful in creating the sound. And again, if you're trying to use all of them and none of them are really working, it's gonna sound like a mess, you know? So you really want to focus on one and try to get that at least up to 80%, right? I always go by the 80% rule. If you can get a tool or an element working at least 80%, that's good enough to use in your sound, in your atmosphere, in your playing, and then you can move on to integrating more elements, more strategies, more tools. But if it's at like 50%, just to give you an example, if you're working on like your rootless voicings you're selling, or in this particular podcast, I give you the element of fourth voicings in your left hand. If you're working on those and they're at like 30, 40, 50%, 60, even 70, it's really not going to utilize the tool or optimize it so that you're listening back and saying, oh, okay, this is what I want. It actually may even make your mind go, oh, this isn't, why isn't this working? This isn't what I wanted. I might have to look elsewhere. And then students kind of turn their focus to another shiny object because they haven't worked hard enough at the tool. And that's a very, 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 what's the right word? A dangerous situation to be in, you know, not like physically dangerous, but mentally and just for your progress in jazz piano, because you have everything you need in front of you. All right, I promise you, everything that you really need to become a great professional jazz pianist is actually in this podcast. You know, the main thing is about accountability or trusting me as your teacher or trusting me inside the membership and the education I'm giving you and focusing on those tools and practicing them until you can really get them up to that 80% mark. Because then other students go, oh, Brendan doesn't know what he's talking about, or this isn't the information I need. I need this over here. I need more transcriptions. I need Herbie. I need some fancy stuff. You go back to your spices that give you like the kind of instant chemical endorphin boost in your head. It's like eating a bowl of ice cream. Right? But it really never amounts to anything much at all, to be honest with you. You have all these kind of fun, fancy things, but when it comes time to actually perform a tune, whether it's that solo piano in a band or your improvisation, it still doesn't, everything doesn't come together. You don't sound like a complete jazz pianist because you don't have an underlying structure. So I don't know where that came from, to be honest. I think it was just a spur of the moment, inspirational speech for you all, but I just wanted to throw that out there. I took a little bit of time off the past couple weeks. I needed it. My team did as well. And I think that's good. You know, I like to send a lot of content out. I like to write a lot of emails to you all, teaching lessons. Obviously, I promote the membership. I promote my live programs that are happening currently right now, the accelerator program, the mastermind program. And just, I like to stay in constant touch with you all to let you know what's happening inside of Jazz Piano School. I really took a step back. I don't know if you noticed. I'm sure some people did. They're like, oh, Brendan hasn't been reaching out as much. And I wanted to let you know why. I thought it was good. It's always good to take space. I think it's always good to take a little space and take a different perspective on what you're doing. You know, if you're really in the weeds of things, if you're in the thick of things, that's okay. But you do need other perspective. You got to step outside sometimes. And I think this holds true for anything in life. You know, whether it's that's jazz piano, your job, your passion in life, your motivation, whatever your goals are or your pursuits, you know, it's always good to just relax and slow down and just stop. Just stop for a little while. Nothing, I mean, you know, it depends how long you stop for. Obviously, if I stopped for 3 months or so and I ghosted everybody, they'd be like, what is happening? But, you know, a week and a half, it's not going to make that much of a difference. I'm back. Here we go. And we're going strong. But I just wanted to throw that out there, give you guys an update for the podcast. I'll probably shoot an email out to everyone to let them know that as well. All right. The accelerator program is going super well. It's going awesome. It's halfway through. And we'll be starting another one very, very soon. The mastermind program, my Inner Circle mastermind program, is coming to an end very soon as well. I shouldn't say very soon, but decently soon. Two of the three semesters are almost done. That will end in late May. So depending upon how many people are going to continue forward for another program, I'll have more spots open with that. And I'll give you guys more information about that. I always like, again, like I just said, I like to take some time in between my programs, assess what went well, what could use some optimization, what could go better. So the structure might be tweaked a little bit, things might change a little bit. So I'm kind of working on that. I'm seeing how things are going. Sterling Koza and Trent Bryden are doing an amazing job as educators working for Jazz Piano School, helping me out. And again, I'm not the best teacher on the planet, right? I'm only one person. I only have, my own knowledge, my own philosophies, right? I think my job as a leader and CEO of Jazz Piano School is to really collaborate and bring educators together or inspire you all to really do as much as possible and research and learn as much as possible. But no, you all don't need to study with me, right? I'm not the best teacher. Sterling has his master's from Manhattan School of Music. Trent's an amazing musician that has recorded albums, is playing gigs, learned so much. And, there's so much to learn from every single educator out there. So they're doing a fantastic job helping me in the live programs and working with students. And then I am also part of those as well. I think that's it, guys. If you're interested in taking some further steps with the Jazz Piano School educational membership, which I will be tweaking and actually recalibrating again with my kind of new philosophies, and I'm kind of playing with a couple of things because it's really going to be based on three goals that if you've been following the podcast for a while, I'm trying to really just really get into everyone's brains that are listening to the podcast, that listen out there. And these three goals are essentially the three categories. Like, so many students just learn for the sake of learning. You know you want to get better at jazz piano, so you just go out there and you gather information, right? And you just learn and learn and learn, and you don't really know what you're learning or why you're learning stuff. And in life, this is like, again, like having a Ferrari and just driving around aimlessly with a Ferrari without trying to get to a destination, or having I keep saying this analogy because I really want you all to hear it. Having the best pilot flying the best plane, but they don't have a destination. They're just flying in circles aimlessly, right? And again, this can get very frustrating for you. I've been there. I know what it looks like. I see students all this time. I see students a lot of the time do this. And it's one of the reasons that I've been producing content on these three goals, playing in a band or comping or any sort of accompaniment. Right? Any sort of accompaniment. If you're a high school student playing in a high school band, if you're playing in a band right now, if you're accompanying a vocalist, if you want to play piano for vocals, right? For instrumentalists, or play with a bass player, anything like that, that's the first goal. Like, these are the three most desired goals that I've heard over the past 25 years of teaching come out of students' mouth, right? They'll say, okay, Brendan, I want to learn jazz piano. I'm like, okay, that's great. We all want to learn jazz piano, right? Why? Why do you want to learn jazz piano? Now, after that, their reasoning, this is based on data, guys. This is literally proven results of data that I've tracked over the years of students. They either will say, oh, I play in a band. I want to get better because I play in a band. That's one of the goals. The next thing they'll say is, oh, I play at home. I like to play solo piano. I want to get better at solo piano. Cool. And the other thing they'll say is, I want to learn how to improvise. So it's not just about playing jazz piano. And those track, like, the educational paths for each of those three goals are very separate paths. They're separate skill sets. They're separate learning curves. They're separate educational practice things that you need to go about doing in your daily practice routine to get better at those three things. Now, if you're blurring the lines and you're mixing the education, or you don't have any goals, or you don't know what you're practicing, or you don't know what your path is or what your destination is, trust me, when you don't have a target, when you don't have a goal, you're not going to make progress. You're not going to make any progress, okay? So that's why it's so important. Pick one. Stay in the lane. Now, you can have more than one goal. That's totally cool. But just realize, and there's lots of overlap too, by the way. There's overlap. Like, working on goal one will help goal two. Working on goal two will help goal one. But again, they're different skill sets. You can get to certain goals faster. And by the way, those are in order from difficulty. Goal one is the easiest. How to play in a band. You just need to know voicings and comping, really. Goal two, a little bit harder. Much harder. Solo piano. You're responsible for everything. Goal three, improv, is the hardest goal to learn how to do well. Right? It's the hardest goal to execute. It requires the most amount of knowledge. You can start improvising today. I can show you very simple things, but to make it really sound like the way you imagine or what you listen to on the albums or close to that, that's very hard. It's the longest timeline. It's the most difficult thing to do. So this can start to dictate what you want to work on. What do I want to work on today? Do I want to work on my improv goal? Do I want to work on my solo piano goal? And I recommend that you spend at least 3 months, a quarter of the year, just working on one goal. Because again, if you start to bounce around all over the place, you really don't spend time and depth, go deep with one of these goals, you really never feel the results and the progress of going after a particular goal that you want. You never really see the results, like I just said, and the reflection back. And you don't feel that fulfillment. You don't feel happy because you're like, I've been doing all this work. I just don't see results. The reason you're not seeing results is because a combination of things. You got to pick your goal and then you got to go deep with that goal. Stay on it. Just work on the elements and strategies that will get you to your goal, right? If you're trying to work on solo piano, don't work on improv. Do not work on improv, right? Improv is a component of solo piano. I can improvise while I'm playing solo piano, but just the ability to play like cocktail piano or ballads, solo piano, that's a very specific skill set. It's very specific. It requires a handful of elements. Probably on one hand, I could tell you them. And if you work on those elements, it will allow you to achieve your cocktail solo piano goal ballad very fast. But again, students don't know what to work on. You don't know what your goal is. You don't know what the elements are. Everything starts to blur together and then no progress gets made, right? So if you're interested in getting more on these new philosophies that I'm going to be implementing that will drastically help growth, your progress, right? And I'm kind of toying with the things that might be called my growth trio, which is a play on a lot of things, right? It's a play on the trio, jazz piano trio, or just jazz trio in general. It's a play on the trio of the three goals, right, that I'm telling you about and just growing your abilities and skill sets in that. Go to jazzpianoschool.com/membership. You can learn all about the Jazz Piano School membership. Obviously, there's courses available, but all the courses come with the membership. So I'd recommend the membership. And if you're ready to kind of take a next step and you want to study with myself and the educators within Jazz Piano School in a live program setting where you receive custom lesson plans, calls, masterclasses, group lessons with myself and the other educators, recorded lessons, tutorials, all that good stuff in a private community, you can go to live programs, jazzpianoschool.com, and click on the live programs tab to get on that wait list, because these are going to be opening up again real soon. They are pretty in demand. So the spots will fill up rather fast. And I always give the participants the ability to roll over into the next program, the first dibs, and then I open it up to the wait list, and then I open it up to the public. So get on the wait list and you'll be first to know about the information. All right, that being said, here we go, let's dive in. All right, so here we go. Number one, the very first thing that you can start to do to create a modern sound, fourth voicings in your left hand. Okay, I'll get into what my right hand was doing in just a second, but fourth voicings in your left hand are immediately going to give you a completely different sound than your rootless voicings, than your three-note voicings. Your rootless voicings obviously are going to be used a lot more in bebop. Three-note voicings will be used a lot more in bebop, things like that, shells. Fourth voicings in your left hand are really going to immediately give you that sound. Now let's talk about your fourth voicings in some chords first. So if I'm playing over a C minor 7 like I was just doing, you can move about in different ways. A lot of times I like to use 1-4-7. Now I'm not creating or reflecting the sound of the minor third, which you kind of need. So I do like to move up and down to get the minor third in there. So again, on this voicing, I'm hitting the minor third, but I don't have the minor 7. That's okay. You can switch back and forth between the voicings to create the effect of the minor C minor 7 chord that you're playing, okay? So I have 1-4-7 here. I'm just going up diatonically to, again, 2-5 root, right? I'm talking in terms of C minor, but again, in terms of the voicing, it's just 1-4-7 again. D, G, C. Now here, this is a different type. This isn't perfect fourths anymore. We have E flat, A natural, which is the 13, over our C minor 7. And then we have the 9 on top. So it's a beautiful voicing there. So that's what I like to do. Sometimes I'll move up to this voicing here. Again, you can kind of keep going if you want, but I don't want to go too far. Let's keep it simple, right? You can start to move about and even just maybe stick with one. Just try one voicing. I like to hit this fifth down here. This is like a true McCoy thing to do. Jump up to your voicing here. Maybe shift back down or just jump back down. Hit a different one. And it's completely up to you how you want to express yourself. Now, I use this when I'm improvising in my right hand. So if I'm improvising, right? So obviously you can see I'm kind of jumping about. I'm improvising in my right hand. The next thing, number two. So that was number one. Number two. If you don't want to use fourth voicings, that's okay. You don't have to start to relearn fourth, or not relearn, I should say, learn new fourth voicings. If you know your rootless voicings, you can start to use them in different ways. Let me go back for a second. I completely forgot about something I wanted to tell you guys. My fourth voicing is over a C minor 7. If I'm improvising over a major 7 chord, like a C major 7, again, this kind of holds true for the major 7, but you don't have as much flexibility as movements because a lot of this stuff is going to give you like kind of some interesting chords. Like this particular fourth voicing isn't the best sounding voicing over C major 7, so I like to use this one right here. Switch back and forth. I also like to use this and this. So the ones I really avoid over major 7 chords are going to have the fourth in them. Right, so that's going to be 1-4-7. That's not going to sound great. Your 2 voicing over the second note of your diatonic major scale will sound good. 3 will sound good. Again, 4, you know, you can get away with it. I've used it before. I don't mind it, but as a beginner, I might stay away from that. Here we go, 5-1-4. Again, I'd probably stay away from this. I like this one here. And I like this one here too. So I'll bounce around between those when I'm jumping back and forth with my left hand. The next one, the dominant 7 voicing, is actually going to be a sus. So when I'm playing over a C7 chord, most of the time I'm making this a sus chord. And I'm kind of using similar techniques that I was over the C minor 7. But I am going to reharm dominants to make them sus chords, which is going to come up later. Anyway. So that was just kind of revisiting number one. Number two, we want to thicken up our rootless voicings. Thick voicings are great for a modern sound, and also thin voicings with clusters. Stuff like this. So if I were to play a C major 7, I might play the shells plus the root there, or I might play the shells plus the 9, or I might play a big thick voicing. Like a 5-note voicing. So I'm playing a rootless voicing and I'm adding the 13. I also might add like the 13 and sharp 11. So I might play my fifth down here, jump up to my sharp 11 voicing. Right? So essentially big, thick voicings in your left hand, 5-note voicings with extensions are going to be another way to really thicken up the sound that you're trying to create. Let's go to number three. I'm going to talk about improvisation now. In bebop, improvisation has a lot of tension and release with different ways to approach chord tone. So if I play a bebop line, right? I had a lot of bobbing and weaving in and around chord tones with different types of bebop approaches. Now, that's what creates the bebop sound. If you're looking for a bebop sound, obviously this is not the video for you because you want to use other techniques and other strategies and other methods. So, when improvising in a more modern sound, we don't usually use bebop approaches. I shouldn't say usually, almost never. You can put them in here and there to reflect the sound of bebop. But a modern jazz sound will take on a more linear approach with different types of patterns with a small groupings of notes. Let's talk about what I mean. So back to my C minor example where I was kind of jumping around with my left hand voicings. In my right hand, I was using a pool of 5 notes, meaning I was choosing from 5 notes, a pentatonic scale. Here is my minor pentatonic scale. 1, 2, 3, flat 3, because I'm improvising over a minor chord. 5, 6. Okay?
So again, five notes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And again, the note numbers as they relate to the chord scale, 1, 2, 3, 5, 6. Now, modern jazz and a lot of, again, modern sounds come from different combinations of these notes. And you want to, even though there's five notes, you want to think about groupings of four. So I might go 1, 2, 3, 4. There's my first group. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. So I'm really thinking in groupings of four, even though I have five notes to choose from. Okay, now when I'm randomly selecting patterns. There's a whole thing inside of JPS where you can work through all the permeations of these patterns, right? And so on and so forth. And I mean, this is essentially a large, large rabbit hole of what you're getting into as far as how to connect a lot of these combinations of patterns to create a modern sound. Now, you know, this is just modern basics, right? You don't need to get into that. But if you are interested in that, go to JPS, jazzpianoschool.com/membership, and you can get all that stuff inside the membership. But essentially here, what we're doing, just picking random combinations of these five notes and improvising with them. So again, playing random types of movements and jumping back and forth with these, with this particular scale. Now, there's really two ways to approach the scale. You can play more linear, or you can play it thinking about patterns, more patternistic, meaning I can jump around a little bit more. Right, and kind of really try to just bounce back and forth, I guess. So when I start to put it together a little bit, again, it starts to sound like what I demonstrated before. And so forth. Okay, I did hit a wrong note, right? I hit an F natural at one point accidentally. That was not in the pentatonic scale, but that's okay. I mean, you can obviously hit notes within the Dorian mode. That's completely okay. I hit an F natural. It's not going to sound bad necessarily, right, at all. Now, there's lots of different ways to use your pentatonic scales. I don't want to get too deep into this because I still want to keep it simple. Your major pentatonic scale is essentially just has a natural three in there. So if I was soloing over, a major seven, very easy way for a beginner to get some modern sounds. And again, even if I was soloing like over a C7 and I wanted to use more of a traditional voicing here in my left hand, I could do that. It doesn't necessarily reflect the sound of the flat seven, okay? I'm using my C major pentatonic scale over a C7 chord, which, you know, it's kind of a preference. You're leaving that note out, but it is an important note. So if I wanted to get that sound, this is going to lead me to another tip that you can use for your pentatonics. And again, this is a deep rabbit hole, guys, okay? All of these types of things are inside, included in Jazz Piano School. But if I switch up my pentatonic scale, let's say I use a G minor pentatonic scale over a C7 chord. Here's my G minor pentatonic scale. 1, 2, flat 3, 5, 6. Now check it out. Here are the notes that I'm playing, and look how they fit over a C7 chord. Right? I get the 5, I get the 13, I get the 7 now, I get the 9, and I get the 3. So I actually have both shells in there. The only thing that's missing is the 4, I don't need that, and the root. So this is actually a pretty good way to think about if you want to create a modern sound over dominant chords. Play the minor pentatonic scale that's up a fifth from the dominant chord you're soloing over, right? So if I were to solo over C7, I would think G minor pentatonic. on and so forth. And again, if I wanted to solo over F7, I could think C minor pentatonic scale. Now you'll notice I was using a three note voicing to play this, right? So it sounded, a little mix between a bop style because of my left voicing and my right hand pentatonic. If I want to kind of get more of a modern sound out of this, I could switch back and forth between my fourth voicings, but then guys, guess what? We start to get into, right, our fourth voicing, which creates a sus chord. Now this pentatonic scale I just showed you isn't necessarily the best thing for that. I'm gonna get to what we're going to be known, or what is known, I should say, as hexatonic scales. This is gonna be number 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, this is gonna be number 4 in the list. So let's say we're soloing over this fourth voicing now that we want to play. We're creating a reharm out of our C7 chord and making it a sus chord. A sus chord just has the 4 in it instead of the 3. That's it. So now what I can do here is I can play what's known as a hexatonic scale. A hexatonic scale has 6 notes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Now, the hexatonic scale that I'm creating here is based off of 2 triads. A flat 7 triad and a 1 major triad. A flat 7 major triad, a B flat triad, and a 1 triad. So I'm pooling those 6 notes together and I'm creating a scale. And just like I did with my pentatonic scale, I can use this in a more scalar motion. Cool sound, right? Or I can use it more in a patternistic way or a triadic way. So when thinking triadically, I'm going to be thinking about these 2 triads and breaking them up and splitting them. So I might think B flat first in a grouping of 4 notes, 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and. Now I went to my C major triad after that. So I thought B flat major, then I thought C major. And then I'm going to think B flat major, and then I'm going to think C major. You see that? So B flat. And you don't have to play continuous notes. Obviously, you can break it up. I might go 1, 2, and 3, and 4. 1 and 2, 3 and 4, right? 1 and 2 and 3, 4 and 1, 2 and 3. You can break up your movement. So then I'll sped up a little bit faster. It sounds like this. Whoops. Faster, a little bit more swag. I hit an A natural in there, right, which is out of the scale. That's why I said whoops. 1, 2, 3, 4. So on and so forth. And again, you can kind of mess around with this, different combinations, right? And that's just the improvisation over that one chord. Now, obviously, it takes a little while to get used to this over different types of chords, different sus chords, and merging them together. But that is one of the hexatonic scales that can really start to transform your playing into a modern jazz sound. Now, there's lots of pentatonic scales. There's lots of hexatonic scales. And when I say there's lots of them, there's not really lots of pentatonic scales. You got your major and minor and a couple more. But you can start, like I showed you before, you can start to take different pentatonic scales or even different hexatonic scales and use them over different chords to get different sounds. One such example of this is if I were to take a hexatonic scale that was a 1 major triad and a 2 major triad, this would give me sharp 11, right? A sharp 11 sound and a 13 sound. So if I were to play over a C major 7 chord now, and I were to think about this hexatonic scale, the 1 major triad and 2 triad, so on and so forth. So it gives you lots of different options, lots of different ways. And again, this is a huge, huge rabbit hole, right, that you're going down into modern jazz. But a lot of these simple tricks should help. And again, you can get the full scope of things inside of Jazz Piano School, where I break everything down for you and structure it all out. The other thing that I want to go over here is the transformation of sus chords from dominants. And I've been talking about this a lot already. One, two, three, four, five. Yes, this is going to be five. Sorry, my number system on my notes is all screwed up here. Five, six, seven. There we go. So this is going to be number five. A lot of what you hear in jazz is dominant chords transformed into sus chords. So like if I were to play a blues in a more traditional style, so forth. That's not what you would hear, right, in a modern jazz sound. Now, the reason for that is because you would hear sus chords, right? And you would hear a sus chord on the four, probably. These are fourth forcings I'm using in my right hand, right and left hand, right? So this is really what you would hear over a modern blues. You would hear sus chords. So when you can transform any dominant chord really into a sus chord, it's okay even if it's in a 2-5-1, or if you're taking an old jazz standard and kind of reharming some of the dominant chords into sus chords, but that particular tool and strategy in and of itself is going to already create new sounds. So just take your dominant chords, make them sus, and that's going to give you a modern sound. The last two things I want to cover are extensions. Extensions are just much more prevalent in different ways. I shouldn't say they're more prevalent, or like, you know, extensions happen a lot in bebop too, but different types of extensions, I would say they're really focused on in modern jazz, like the 9s, the 11s, the 13s, like over a G minor chord, right? Miles really started messing around with these 13s and sitting on them, sitting on 9s, sitting on 11s. Herbie, right, he was doing all sorts of extensions on a lot of the dominant chords, different types of scales and things like that. So I don't want to get that deep into that, right? This is already kind of going pretty long, but focus on utilizing different types of extensions. Like instead of just playing a bebop line, like I might really sit on an extension or play it and emphasize it while my left hand is kind of emphasizing the extensions that I'm going after. My left hand is also going to add in like a lot more extensions in my voicing. So I have the sharp 11th, natural 13, 9 here. So I might mess around with those extensions in my right hand in different types of patterns or different types of odd ways. Right? This is clearly out. Like, this does not sound like bebop, okay? And I mean, you could probably call this something and put a name to it. Oh, that's the blah, 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 right? You can analyze it in a lot of different ways. That's not what I'm trying to teach you right now. I'm just trying to say, pick some extensions that fit over your chord. So if I'm playing over a C7, don't just use a regular rootless voicing. Throw the sharp 11 in there. Throw the 9 in there. Throw the 13 in there. Plump it up with extensions. And then take your right hand and look at the extensions you're playing. And start to mess around with the extensions and really land on them and emphasize them in your solo. Bebop is all about hitting chord tones and coming in and out and around chord tones. Modern jazz, you can sit on extensions for your whole solo. That's what's going to create a good modern sound. And finally, an open time feel, okay? And this is usually done mostly when you're improvising. When you sit on a chord and just let the time pass, that's going to open up the time. Right, bebop is really about the swinging eighth notes and the chord notes. Like nothing stops. One and two and three and four and one and two and three and four and triplet, 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 right? It's just, you're really hearing that time. It's consistent. It doesn't really stop. Modern jazz really takes on an open time feel. Now, the time is consistent underneath, but we just feel it in a different way. So instead of feeling all four quarter notes, I'm actually going to feel more like half notes or whole notes even. So I might feel... So what I'm feeling really now is just one, one. I'm not feeling one, two, three, four. That's the swing feel. That's a traditional. The time and like space really start to kind of warp again. If you check out, obviously Keith Jarrett, Brad Meldow, the way the drummer's playing, the way they're playing, Herbie, stuff starts to really open up because they're feeling the time and stretching it in different ways. Although there is the time underneath. Like, you can still subdivide it into four beats. If you subdivide it into half notes or whole notes, meaning you feel it, you only feel two beats per measure, like one, three, one, three. That's going to open up your playing. And then, like, I was just trying to feel it right now. I was thinking one, one, one. I'm just playing a 2-5-1-6 in the key of F. One, one, one. One, because everything in the middle now is space, and you can play and mess around with different ways in that space, and it takes on a much more open feel. All right, let's go back through these real quick. Left hand fourths comping, okay? Number two, thick left hand voicings and extensions, right? Or like the one I was just showing you over the dominant chord, or kind of small clusters. That's a cool one for a minor seven voicing. This a lot, right? Or this. That's a really cool one. These kind of rubs and clusters give you really cool modern sound. Your pentatonic scale in your right hand. Major, minor. Okay. Your hexatonic scale. I didn't give you too many. There's lots and lots more, right? But there's no way I could pack it all in. Your hexatonic scale, I gave you the sus. So on and so forth. And then reharm your dominants to become sus chords. Okay. Extensions, right? Really landing on extensions, messing around with extensions. So on and so forth. Woo. And then opening up the time. Opening up the time. Really trying to take, maybe take a jazz standard like Autumn Leaves. Instead of feeling 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, just feel... hear this a lot. Autumn Leaves can be played more traditionally or more modern as well. But open up the time, subdivide the time, not into four beats, into half notes and whole notes, and that will really change in the effect you're playing. Okay. If you guys enjoyed this content, again, all this is structured inside of Jazz Piano School. Go to jazzpianoschool.com/membership to check out all the information that we have available if you are interested in joining. With that being said, I'll talk to you guys later.